you're going to have to start something on your own eventually in order to get to the place where you can work for a Disney Studios, or you can work for J.J. Abrams, or you can work for Steven Spielberg, or you can work at, you know, Lucasfilm, or whatever it is you're going to do. You need to have a body of work you've built up, even if it's student films, even if it's you doing it in your own house. You show that you can do it on your own without being prompted.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. And boy, have I got a great episode for you today. But before we get into that, I want to let you know about an opportunity. Many of us find that we spend a lot of time writing. Now, maybe you are or are not an author, but there are other ways that our writing shows up, right? Like emails, blog posts, social media captions, maybe descriptions of our art or creations or products. Or maybe it is a book, or you have that secret desire. You haven't told anybody yet, but you really do want to write a book. Well, no matter where you are in that process, whether you are employing writing for some of these things or you're hoping to, my friends over at Hope Writers have put together a quick quiz for you to determine where you are and kind of what your next steps are. So, you know, if maybe some of your goals are to become a published writer or to earn some income from your writing, to make a bigger impact with your blog, or to share your story with others who need to hear it. I mean, that's huge today. No matter what it is, you can take this 30-second quiz and it will help you discover your next step to take. And it's absolutely free. So all you have to do is go to this link. It's bit.ly/cchopewriters. So once again, that's bit.ly/cchopewriters. And I'll put that link in the show notes so that you can easily click it and take this quiz. And it may only be up for a short amount of time, so don't delay. They just want to help you take your next steps in your writing journey. So for today's episode, well, many of you know that I've shared before that my childhood was filled with cartoons. In fact, I didn't only want to watch cartoons and draw cartoons. I actually wanted to be a cartoon. You know, I love the environments that were created, these worlds, these characters that you could relate to, and they would just make you laugh, and so many awesome things that happened in cartoons. To this day, I still have friends where we quote certain cartoons, especially Looney Tunes, and certain scenes that were just really hysterical for us. So when I had the chance to chat with my guest today, I was very, very excited. My guest today is Butch Hartman, an award-winning television creator. You may know him from The Fairly Odd Parents, Danny Phantom, Tough Puppy, and Bunsen is a Beast. He has had over 34 years in Hollywood. You know, created 4 television shows on Nickelodeon, 1 YouTube show, a kids app called Noog Network, and a new book called Mad Hustle. Now, in today's conversation, we talk about this book, as well as Butch gives us some advice on how to pitch our ideas. You know, for him specifically within the Hollywood setting, and maybe you, your dream, your desire is to pitch in that setting as well. But even if you're not someone who wants to pitch a television show, an animated series to Hollywood or to some big network, we talk about the importance of learning how to pitch your idea. Somewhere along the way, you need to learn how to talk about your idea, how to sell your idea to a room full of people, and to know some tips and tricks that can help you communicate clearly and not go into your situation unprepared and then walk away defeated and discouraged, not ever wanting to do that ever again. So today's talk is really inspirational. We get into Butch's background and his journey, but we also get very practical on some things that you can apply to your journey today, no matter where you are, no matter what it is that you want to pitch to other people. And just as an aside, I get it. If you're an artist, you know, that word pitch may give you hives right now. You know, you think, ooh, sales, ooh, pitching. I don't know. That's just not part of my deal. I don't feel comfortable with that. I want to challenge you to reframe the conversation in your head, because pitching is really just getting other people on board with your idea. We're not trying to be a sleazy salesman. We're not trying to coerce someone to do something or buy something that they don't want. You know, I struggled with this for a long time in the past. And I just thought, well, I'm just not going to do it. It's not going to be part of what I want to do. But the reality is that if you want to make your living off of your creativity, you need to learn these skills. They need to become tools in your toolbox. And again, it doesn't have to be done in such a way that you feel like you can't put your head on the pillow at night and sleep with integrity. We're talking about serving people. We're talking about getting your ideas out there, pitching your ideas to a room full of people because you believe in it and you believe in the work that you do and how it can help other people. So be encouraged today. I hope that this chat really maybe ignites something within you. And, you know, let me know if there's something you're going to pitch or something you do pitch as a result of this. Let me know. I'd really love to hear the stories of how these episodes make an impact on your day to day. So without further ado, here is my awesome interview with Butch Hartman. Welcome, Butch Hartman. I am thrilled that you are here with us today. Thank you so much.
Well, I wish I was actually with you. I'm actually here in this little box. I can't get out. I'm in this little phone box. Nice to meet you, Mike, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So you are someone who, man, your list of credentials just goes on for pages and pages in just amazing work that you have done and continue to do today. And I'm excited to dive into a little bit of that stuff today. But before we go too far, can you just, for anyone who may not be familiar with you, can you just give us a little snapshot of who are you and what do you do?
Well, I created a character called Mickey Mouse, and I have this amusement park I threw together called Disneyland. No, I'm kidding. I wish I could say that. No, I'm a guy. I worked at Nickelodeon for 20 years, from 1997 to 2018. And I created some cartoon shows. People might know my shows. The best one they might know is the best is The Fairly Odd Parents. And I created a show called Danny Phantom. And then I created a show called Tough Puppy. And then I created a show called Bunsen is a Beast. And I did those four shows over my run at Nickelodeon, along with a million other pilots we did and live action spin-off episodes of The Fairly Odd Parents and things like that. We did, I mean, not episodes, but movies. We did live action movies. I see, like, I have a poster. Oh, right there. Yeah. We did some live action movies of The Fairly Odd Parents. So just had an incredible run over there. I couldn't be more grateful or thrilled at my time at Nickelodeon. So, I did that stuff. And I did a show, I forgot on Nickelodeon, did a show on YouTube called The Hobby Kids. It's an animated show. And written a few movie screenplays that have not been produced, sadly, but you know, that's Hollywood for you. But I had an app called the Noog Network, and now that's a YouTube channel. I have my own YouTube channel, and just kind of out there doing and creating stuff as much as I can. It's just fun.
Yeah. So all that to say, you're a slacker, right?
Well, that was just last week. No, this week. Yeah. No. You know, man, I just love creating entertainment and content. I guess you call it content these days. You know, because when I was a kid back in the 70s, you know, television was untouchable. You'd watch TV, you'd be like, how do things get on TV? How do those people get in there? Who made this? How did they get? You know, who? How did this happen? How do you get on television? And so, you know, I moved to California at a young age and learned how the Hollywood process works. So
I love too that, you know, it's the cartoons, you know, it's these shows that we grew up with, you know, our age range. I mean, that's how it started for me. This fire of wanting to create was, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. It was Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera and all these things. And it's funny because people ask me sometimes, like, well, did you know what you wanted to be when you were a kid? You know, when you grew up, like, what was that thing that everybody has that thing they want to gravitate towards? And they're like, you know, it must have been an artist for you. And I say, well, actually, it wasn't. I say that I wanted to be a cartoon when I grew up because I wanted to live in that world. I wanted to be a part, you know, friends with those characters. And it was so immersive. So,
yeah, I was the same way. I mean, I grew up in the 70s, and you know, you could really only see cartoons on Saturday morning. You might see a couple after school during the week, but it was really kind of limited compared to the way it is now, where you can, there's content every 4 seconds. You can watch whatever you want. I shouldn't say every 4 seconds, every second. But yeah, I really wanted to be on in those worlds too. I wanted to be a superhero. I wanted to meet Spider-Man. I wanted to meet Fred Flintstone. I wanted to, you know, go into a comic book when I was a kid. And when I finally got to do the show, The Fairly Odd Parents, I got to actually give Timmy Turner all of the wishes I had when I was a kid. You know, Timmy can go into a comic book now. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So what did your journey look like for that? Because obviously, you know, you're talking about all these incredible projects you were able to be a part of. But everybody's story starts with, hey, you know, I was just a kid with a dream, with a passion, with a talent. And I started out on my road and it twisted and turned. And, you know, fill us in on a little bit of it. What did that look like for you?
The main thing was when I was a kid, I'm from Michigan originally. I'm from the Midwest. And so not a lot of entertainment there. You either are an auto worker or, you know, some other sort of, you know, job that you would get in Michigan, and nothing wrong with that. But I always wanted to be in entertainment. I wanted to do a comic strip. I wanted to make my own cartoons. I wanted to make movies. When I was a kid, I had a 16 millimeter camera. Actually, it was super, I wouldn't even 16 millimeter, it was a super 8 camera. I do this because you had to hold the camera up like that, you know? And, the film was so thin. But I actually saved up a bunch of green stamps, got my first movie camera. So my friends and I would make movies all the time. I'd edit them. And, you know, it came down to really splicing tape together with the film strip and all that. That's unheard of. That's unheard of anymore. But you're talking when Indiana, when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, we made our own, movie. It was called Indiana Butch. And so I was Indiana Butch with a cowboy hat on, and I was, you know, finding treasure and stuff. Anyway, started doing that stuff. And then I found out about this school called Cal Arts, which is in Valencia, California. I had some older friends of mine. I was in 10th grade. I had a couple friends that were junior and senior in different schools. We somehow got together, and we all loved animation. We found out about Cal Arts, and we all came out to Cal Arts 1 year after the other. My one friend came, and he was a senior, and then he graduated. My next friend graduated, then I finally graduated, came out to Cal Arts. I say came out. I mean, I had to really get my portfolio together. I didn't just show up at Cal Arts. I had to get my portfolio together. I'd go to the Detroit Zoo in the winter, and I would draw the animals because they wanted you to have a really nice life drawing collection in your portfolio. So I would, you know, I went to the zoo in the winter because you could go in for free because nobody went to the zoo. So I'd go in, I'd draw the animals, and I really built up my portfolio because I knew what they were looking for because my other two friends had already gone. So they went, and then I got my portfolio accepted. I got accepted to Cal Arts, and I left for Cal Arts. I graduated high school in June of 83, and in September of 83, I was in California in my dorm room at Cal Arts. And so Cal Arts was founded by Walt Disney, and they teach animation, art, drama, dancing, writing, filmmaking, everything there. And so I hung out with all these animation guys. I got immersed in what I loved. And I always tell people all the time, if you want to do something in the arts, make sure that you get immersed in it. Don't just be like the only guy in your town who does it. That's fine. If you want to advance and you want to excel and go to the next level, you got to be immersed in this. If you're a baseball player, you got to hang out with baseball players, you know? And I wanted to be an animator for Disney. So I was hanging out with all these guys, and all the guys I hung out with now, back then, 35 years ago, they're some of the top guys in the business now. They run Pixar. They help direct some of the best live action, best animated shows at Disney and things like that. So some of the, they turn out to be some of the biggest guys in the industry. So we all sort of went, I got into television. So I kind of branched out into TV, and the rest is history. We kind of just started making our own way. But and nothing is easy. You have to make your own way. It's nice if you have family or friends that are in the industry before you get there. That's always a huge asset. But you're really going to have to really work hard if you want to excel in Hollywood or in the art business, you know, in the TV business.
Yeah. So that whole concept of the community that you're in, pushing you, making you do better, having those connections. I mean, that's huge. And if somebody is in the situation where they're like, you know, I feel like I don't have any connections, I feel like I don't have that community, what would you recommend to them?
Yeah, good question. if you don't have an immediate community around you right now, you can find one. And the best way to find one is online. And, you know, the internet's a tool that can be used for good or bad, you know, and so use it for good. Use your power of the internet for good. You know, someone said, I just heard this recently, you know, the iPhone can make you money. This iPhone is so smart. If you can't make money with the iPhone, it's not the iPhone's fault. It's your fault. The iPhone can do anything. The computer can do anything, just where you direct it, where you guide it. There's all kinds of online forums that you can find and locate people that are like you. You know, if you're a writer, find a writer's forum. If you're an artist, find an artist forum. If you like Spider-Man, find an I Like Spider-Man forum, whatever it is, you can find that. And I know, you know, if you don't meet them face to face, that's interesting, but there's ways to find community that way. And I really encourage people though, there's probably a lot of community around you if you look. One of the dangers of the internet is that most of us don't leave our houses anymore. We sit on the computer all day long and nobody gets outside and meets anybody, you know, especially, with some of the things that have transpired over the last whatever, you know, few months, years, whatever, when people are forced to stay home and stuff, that can make you not want to go outside. But I encourage you all to get out and start to make relationships. You know, when I was an artist, I'm still an artist, not was, when I'm an artist, most artists want to put their headphones in and draw. They just want to draw and watch Netflix or whatever it is. And they're very private people. And I'm an artist, so I know exactly what that's like. But there came a time when I wanted to move up in the world. I take the headphones out and I had to look up from my desk and go, oh, I'm going to go talk to that person. And what are they doing over there? What's going on over there? And it might be scary and it might be a little bit uncomfortable, but it's called getting out of your comfort zone, you know? And that's, you know, one of the things I talk about, even in my new book, I have a whole chapter devoted to getting out of the comfort zone. And if you don't get out of the comfort zone, you're not going to really go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't give you very long answers. I apologize.
No, but it's great. It's great. Because, you know, you have such a wealth of experience to draw from and the insights that you've gleaned, you know, I think are really helpful for anybody who's on their creative journey. And so many times I think we as artists and creative people, we think that what we experience is so unique. We want to be unique in some fashion, right? But then we also think, well, the problems we're experiencing, the issues that we're facing, those are unique too. Nobody else is experiencing those things. But yet when we start to talk about these things, and that's why I love to have people on the podcast and talk through what did people's journeys look like? And they realize like, oh, you know what? Like I can totally relate and resonate with what you're saying. And this is how you dealt with it. This is how you solved that problem. And they can do the same. So, you know, when we start to come around these conversations, I think it's really helpful for just the collective community, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I want to tell everybody too, just because you live in a place where maybe you're in a place where there's not really a lot of entertainment being made, or maybe there's not a lot of people doing, like you want to write a graphic novel, you want to write and draw a graphic novel, that's great. But maybe there's not a lot of people around you that are doing that. Go online, watch a YouTube tutorial and see how to go about doing it. How do I do this? You know, and most people like me that are in Hollywood, like right now, when I hire people to work for me, first thing I want to see is what they've already done. I need to see what you've done. Can you show me something that you've done? And if you've not done anything, I'm probably not going to be able to hire you only because I don't know what you can do. You're going to have to start something on your own eventually in order to get to the place where you can work for a Disney Studios, or you can work for J.J. Abrams, or you can work for Steven Spielberg, or you can work at, you know, Lucasfilm, or whatever it is you're going to do. You need to have a body of work you've built up, even if it's student films, even if it's you doing it in your own house. When I was saying, when I was a kid, I had the movie camera that I did. I would show people those stupid movies. They go, look, I did this, but it showed that I could do something. And believe me, those movies were not good. Trust me. But you know, you show that you can do it on your own without being prompted. I will always hire somebody that makes my life easier. You know, you need to make someone, like if you're a guitar player in a band, right? Let's say I have a band, I need a guitar player. If you can play guitar, get up on stage, you're helping. I can't have you get up on stage and teach you guitar right there. I can't teach you how to do the guitar. You need to go learn guitar by yourself and then show up when you've learned the guitar. And then you can help me. You know what I mean? So I need you to be able to do the job when you show up.
Yeah.
So do things on your own.
So many people are looking for the validation before they start. And it just doesn't work that way. You need to pick yourself. You need to raise your hand and say, yes, I am selecting myself to go and do the work that I wish someone would hire me to do. And then as you start to lean into that and you start to grow and you start to develop more things, that's when people start to see you and say, oh, I've seen this thing that you did over there. That's awesome. Tell me about that. Hey, or this solves a problem that I have. Like you said, you know, it's bringing value. It's bringing a help. And it's not just this expectation of like being discovered at some point, right?
I always tell people too, that's all very well said. You said that very well. I tell people, look, what would you do all day long if you didn't have, here's what I want to say. What do you do all day no one has to pay you to do? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you love to do? Is it play guitar? Is it play video games? What is it? That's what you should do for a living. Like, well, how do I play video games for a living? Well, there's plenty of people that do it for a living. You know, I don't know. Ask them. You know, well, I love to paint pictures. Great. That's what you should do for a living. Well, how am I going to do that? Exactly. How are you going to do that? You know, we need to figure that out. Can you start a blog? Can you get your name out there? You know, you need to go to art fairs and put your, you know, put your, it's called life. It's called getting your stuff out there. You know, how did anyone know, I guess, who Shakespeare was until he wrote something? You know what I mean? It's like, we need to get ourselves out there, and don't wait for someone to knock on your door. Because unfortunately, I hate to break this to you, there's a billion other doors out there, and they're probably not going to knock on your door right away. Now, once you prove yourself, then they're going to come knocking on your door. I was watching this YouTube video yesterday about Christopher Nolan, the guy who directed Dark Knight and Inception. Mm-hmm. You know Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
I love Christopher Nolan. And he can do anything he wants now in Hollywood. The guy's made so much money. But there was a time when nobody knew who he was. He was like just a guy trying to make movies. And you know, he worked himself, he built himself up. He built up his repertoire. He built up his portfolio of work to now he can kind of command anything he wants in Hollywood and people have to listen to him. Yeah. I think the reason I'm bringing that up is his new movie. He's got a movie coming out and they were trying to move the release date. And he's like, no, we're keeping it here. And they're like, okay, we'll keep it there. Whatever you say, Chris. So, you know, it's that kind of influence that's nice to have when you get that point.
And that's, I think a lot of people want a shortcut. They want that result. They want to be the person that can do whatever they want, whenever they want, and that people come to you. But that doesn't happen without putting in the work and showing up and proving, like you said, that you can do things, you are valuable, that there you get known for something. And then people start to go, okay, yeah, like this person has a track record, this person can do great work. And then eventually that can come of people coming to you because you're known for that thing, right?
Yeah. Well, that helps. And like when I first sold Fairly Odd Parents, I was just a guy who worked at animation studios who worked on other people's shows. I was a guy who I would design characters for this show and I would write scripts for this show. And by the way, when I say design characters, I learned that first. But as I was designing characters, I went, you know, I really want to write stories too. I don't want to be just an artist. I want to write stories as well. Cause let's face it, all of us in entertainment, we're all storytellers.
Yeah.
And I was working on some stories that I didn't like. I'm like, these stories are pretty bad. Who's writing these stories? Let me try one myself. Not that mine was that much better or anything like that, but I was like, well, I can do this too. So I started writing stories too. So then I became a guy who could draw and write. So now I've got two streams of income that are possible as opposed to just one. So, you know, you need to be able to build up your skill set. But I'm afraid of writing. Well, then you're never going to be able to do it. Well, I'm afraid of what they're going to think of me. Listen, the world is full of people that aren't going to like you. But it's also full of people that are going to really like you. But it really doesn't matter what people think. All that matters is what you think. All that matters is if you think you can do it and you're determination is going to determine the course of life for a lot of other people. For example, me thinking of a show called The Fairly Odd Parents changed the lives of my family.
Yeah.
You know, I thought of that idea. I pitched it. It became a show. I didn't just sit back and go, cool, it's a show. And I went like this. Oh, that was easy. No, that was hours of work every day. It was like, I would work 20-hour days for years getting these shows done and getting them put on television. And, but see, as a result of that, my family tree changed. You know, I was able to, you know, buy a nice house for my kids. I was able to live in California where I wanted to live. And I was able to, you know, do things for my family I probably couldn't have been able to do prior to that, you know. And I'm really touched when people say to me, kids I've never met, I say kids, I'm in my 50s, or I meet someone in their 20s. You know, Mr. Hartman, I grew up on your show. It meant so much to me. That means the world to me. You can't pay for that. That's the most wonderful thing. So that really means a lot, because your work is going to influence somebody. No matter what you're doing, whether you're one person in your bedroom or you're running a multi-million dollar corporation, you're going to influence somebody some way. So you have to decide, am I going to influence them in a good way, or am I going to influence them in a bad way? And that's what you have to make a decision about.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. What has been surprising to you about your journey? And maybe that's good or bad, I don't know, but something that you just didn't see coming.
Well, that's very interesting. Probably the most surprising thing has been that I get to do what I love every single day. And for some, I always wanted to do that, but the fact that it actually happened, I just think, you know, because I'm a born again Christian guy and I love Jesus, you know, and I just go, you know, when with Jesus at the center of my heart, I can enjoy really pretty much anything I'm doing. And I prayed about this for many years. I want to do what I love, make money at it, and help influence other people in a positive way. And that's what Jesus gave me. And I got exactly what I asked for, because the Bible says that, you know, and I think it's in book of John, you know, whatever things we ask for, we pray. No, it's Mark 11:24. Whatever things we ask for, when we pray, believe we receive them, we will have them. And John says, I think it's 16:23. It says, if whatever you ask the Father in my name, I will give you, you know? And so you will get what you pray for. But if you don't pray, you're not going to get anything. So that's just my philosophy. I'm not saying that you have to do that for you, but that's my philosophy. So that the surprising thing was that I allowed myself to be led by, you know, Jesus and by the Holy Spirit. And I was like, you know what, you know, there were many times in Hollywood, everyone's begging me to do this, and the crowd's going, do this. And I was like, no, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. I don't feel peace about that. I'm going to go do this. But that's really weird. Why do you want to go do that? Well, I just feel I need to go over here. And I would go over there, and that was the better way to go. You know what I mean? And so that's what I mean. I wouldn't say it's surprising. It was just kind of reassuring. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this book you have, right? So Mad Hustle, How to Pitch and Sell Shows in Hollywood. You wrote this book because you're getting asked a lot of questions, right? About this whole process. Yes. And you're like, let me just put it in one place that's easily accessible for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about just the background on that and just what you're hoping to see happen with this.
Oh, thanks for asking. You know, Mad Hustle, the title comes from a voice actor about 10 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, said to me once, man, you got Mad Hustle. And I said, what is that? And he goes, oh, you just never stop. You keep going. You're always working at it. You know, you always got something going on. You're really, really, basically, you're really trying hard. And I never forgot that term, Mad Hustle. That's a really cool term. And that's really what you need in Hollywood is to have mad hustle. You really need to have a hustle that doesn't quit. And that's what I encourage everybody to have. So the book is basically, like you said, I get emails all the time and I'm grateful for them. People on Instagram, Twitter, how do you do this? How do you pitch a show? How do you write a script? How do I get an agent? All that. And I've gotten these questions for years. And I've actually made the mistake of trying to answer all of them. I've answered many of them. I thought, instead of answering all these emails, why don't I just write a book and I can just recommend the book to people? So that's really what the book is for, is to help other people. Because when I was younger, maybe there's other books out there, I don't know, but I don't really know of any books that sort of address this topic. I'm sure there are some. Yeah. I'm positive there are, but I just don't know what they are. But I know, at least for me, this is my approach, how I pitch shows, how I recommend you do it. And I also give you some of the giant failures and successes that I've been through in the book as well. So you can maybe learn from that.
Yeah. I think the idea of pitching is scary for a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
And especially, you know, creative people who, like you said, you know, they may be more withdrawn. They have this idea, they have this thing they want to put out there, but it's scary to put it out there, or they don't know how to position themselves, or they don't know what to say. They don't want to sound silly. And so I think there's a huge gap in learning and talking about this idea of pitching. And I know, like, for me, really that side of things only came from my background in graphic design, not from like more of the illustration and painting stuff. It was really more, you know, design, because then you're in the marketplace and you're having to pitch ideas and share presentations and do those things in front of people so that you're getting your ideas across. Is there stuff in this book that's helpful for people who maybe don't want to necessarily pitch a show in Hollywood, but just want to understand how to pitch better?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's a section, I think it's in several sections, where I talk about rehearsing your pitch, or like, you know, if you've got an idea for anything, whether it's a TV show or whether it's you want to make dinner for your family, hey, let me present my idea to you. We're going to have steak, and we can have either green beans, asparagus. I mean, there's a way to pitch things, or there's a way to influence people, or the way to get your idea across that a lot of people are good at and some aren't so good at it. You know, a lot of people want the Betty Crocker cake on the box, but they're afraid to make the cake and break a few eggs. And, you know, your cake isn't going to come out perfect the first time. You know, it takes a very special level of guts. And I have a whole chapter called Guts. It takes a whole level of guts to be able to get in front of a room of people and present an idea, especially if it's a cartoon, to do it in a comedic, funny way with sound effects and voices, and you're acting out all the parts and you're going really fast. I mean, that is a unique talent that not many people have. I do encourage people in the book to, you know, rehearse your pitch, do in front of your family and friends. There's a whole section in there about how to protect yourself legally, how to, you know, what to look for in a contract. Do I need an agent? How much do I pay an agent? Is an agent helpful? How do you even get a pitch in the first place? How do you even get into the room? You know, how do you get a pitch at Netflix, for example? I mean, not many people know how to do that. I mean, it's very hard. How do you get a pitch at Disney Plus? Disney Plus, how do I go pitch a show to them? Trust me, you ain't getting into Disney Plus until you have a whole series of things line up for you to get into Disney Plus. So they're very protective about what ideas they hear and who they talk to. So you need to know how to navigate that landscape.
Yeah, I think that's also the part that people would find very intimidating, is that it's like the gatekeepers, right? How do I get through the gatekeepers and get to the people that I want to have access to when they seem so far away, far removed? It's like, and they go, who am I that they'd want to spend time and talk with me? Without giving too much away, is there something that you could kind of tease out a little bit for us?
Oh yeah. Well, let me address the gatekeeper thing real quick first. I want to tell you about the gatekeepers. You might be afraid of the gatekeepers and intimidated by them, but some people aren't, and they're in that gate. They got in. How did all those interns, how did all those receptionists, how did all those writers and actors and artists, how did all those people get in there? And how can you get in there? You need to figure that out, and you can figure it out with my book or without it. My book will help you a little bit more. One thing I can tease out about the book is I have a whole section on the elevator pitch. I don't know if you know what that is, but the elevator pitch is, can you pitch something in 30 seconds? You know, if you're getting in the first floor of an elevator, and you go to the second floor. Oh, actually, you get in the first floor of the elevator, and right before the doors close, Steven Spielberg walks in. And it's you and Steven Spielberg in the elevator, and you're going to the second floor, and he's going to the third floor. You got 30 seconds to pitch him an idea, and then the elevator's going to open, and it's over. So can you pitch your idea in 30 seconds? Meaning, is your idea clear enough you can talk about it in maybe two sentences? I've heard people pitch shows, and they'll say, well, here's my idea. 5 hours later, they're still pitching me the idea, and I've grown a beard and I'm asleep and I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, come on. You know, you need, pitching isn't just getting up in front of people. It's getting up in front of people and being concise, being clear, being quick, and being just nail it on the, you know, hit the target and then, you know, see what the results are. Mm.
Yeah. So how does somebody know if their idea is good for a show? Like, they have this concept, they have maybe characters, they have some kind of setting, right? Here, I'll use myself for instance, right? So I have a book that I wrote. I call it my autobiography. It's called Dear Snow, One Man's Angry Rant Against Winter. And this came about because every time I was outside shoveling, I would get so irritated. And so it became this war between me and snow. And so people, you know, and it actually started as tweets, angry tweets. And people, my friends were like, hey, you should make this into a book. And I was like,
that's funny.
Who's going to buy a book of angry tweets? I'm like, that's dumb. So then I was like, well, what if I illustrate it? So I illustrated it where like I'm the main character, you know, Mad Mike. I'm always mad about snow. And then there's Snowman, the evil snowman, right? So I have all these characters and they're kind of like one page, you know, situational things, kind of like if you took The Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes and Grumpy Old Men and put it in a blender, sure. Right? But for me, like that's was the right forum. So if I was ever to think like, well, would that make a good show? Like, what are the ingredients that actually go into making a good show or a good pitch for a good show? Like, how much do you have to have developed versus do you leave kind of a little mystery?
Oh, well, good question. That's a very big question because every show is different. So, but the main thing you have to do when you're pitching a show is you have to look and see first of all, you have to look and see who you're pitching to. If you're going to pitch, let's say we use Disney Plus, or let's say Disney Plus, you want to go pitch to Disney Plus, right? And you want to pitch a show that involves a boy in a bug costume who fights crime. Okay. You're like, well, this is about a kid in a bug costume and he fights crime. What's his name? His name is Bugman. It's like, well, we've already got Spider-Man, so I don't know if we're going to want a Bugman. What's different about your show? You know, you have to make sure that your show is something that they don't have already. You know, like they want, it usually should be something unique that maybe they don't have. Sometimes though, they're looking for another version. I mean, it's weird. You got to do your homework. Like with Nickelodeon, for example, here's one good thing with Nickelodeon. With Nickelodeon, every show has to be centered around a kid. Every guy says it's got to be centered around a kid, you know? So that's the first thing you go in knowing, okay, if you have a show that's not centered around kids, you're just centered around Mad Mike. The first thing the network would say is, can we make Mike a kid? And then you as the show creator got to go, well, I'm not really sure. My artistic vision, it's me. And they go, well, here's $30,000. You go, well, I think we make him a kid. We can make him a kid. You know, kid that's the goatee. Yeah, exactly. Make him a kid with a goatee. And so you need to, as a show creator and artistic person, you have to realize, okay, where do I draw the line? Am I going to compromise my vision? Or am I just going to go, you know what? It would be cool if he was a kid, you know? On my show Tough Puppy, the original character was this, it was originally called Stud Puppy. It was about this dog who was really tough and real studly, right? But then then you Google the word Stud Puppy, you get a whole bunch of different images you shouldn't be seeing. So we changed it to Tough Puppy and we made him into an actual young dog, like almost like a puppy. Like he was always excited. He was like, he did complete moron, but always excited. So we changed it from a big studly dog to a puppy type of dog to make it more kid-like, you know? And so that's why, that's why we changed that. But anyway, you sort of got to change things according to where you're going to pitch. So Mad Mike, for example, first thing I would say to you is, okay, there's Mike. What other characters are in the show?
Yeah. Well,
and you would say
Snow, the evil snowman, and also Mad Mike's dog Biscuit, who always has to take for a walk in the snow. And then you've got the snowman's friends who every once in a while come. It's like sleet and hail. It's kind of like Rocco and Vinny. And so that's the snowman's gang. And other than that, it's really, there's no other characters in the book.
Well, first thing I tell you have to add a girl to the show. You have to have a female character in the show because you want to have a crossover appeal to boys and girls. And you want to make sure, and by the way, and you should have that because, you know, girls are going to watch TV too. And you should have a best friend that's a girl, or his mom can be in the show, or his grandmother or something. You want to make sure that your show is relatable to an audience. You know, like for example, Fairly Odd Parents, we had Cosmo and Wanda. We had a boy and a girl. So girls could watch, boys could watch. And Timmy Turner was a boy, but there were a million girls on Fairly Odd Parents too. So you make sure that your audience, there's a wide appeal there too, you know, not just with, you know, characters of different race, but characters of different genders and things like that. You might want to make sure that you have a wide appeal to all audience. Get as much appeal in there as you possibly can. You know, make sure that you have as, you know, much like, because any network's going to say, is this character likable? He's Mad Mike, but is he ever nice? Because he seems really unlikable. He's always mad. Why is he mad all the time? You know, and you have to figure out who Mike is, where does Mike live? Because, I mean, think about a half an hour of entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Mike is mad at the snow, but then what?
Right.
You know, there was a movie back in the 80s. It starred Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was called Twins.
Yep.
I remember, oh, they're twins. Get it? Because Danny DeVito's really short. Arnold Schwarzenegger's really buff. You know, it's like, they're twins. But then you got a 90-minute movie to fill up. How do you make that into a movie? So your germ of an idea might be, oh, I get it. But how do you make it entertaining?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, Yeah. So give Mike some friends, give him some nice moments here and there. And I like the fact that the snow is evil, but the snow guy should be kind of a dumb guy. Like he's not really that great at being a villain. Maybe his cohorts are probably stupider than he is, you know? So yes. That's what I would. He's the smartest of the three idiots. That'd be kind of funny.
Nice.
Snow and sleet and hail.
Yes. Yeah. So how much of it, like, do you actually go and like have ready as far as, is there one episode, like a pilot episode, or you don't even go that far? You're just kind of fleshing out like the generalities of the situations and the characters and the, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't ever want to walk. I mean, you can, I'm not saying you don't want to, if you've invested all your own money and you've made an amazing pilot for something and it's done, by all means, bring it in and leave. You're probably not going to watch it in the room with them. They don't have time to watch a half hour, an hour movie, whatever you've made. You leave it with them. Normally though, ordinarily you don't do that because it's a lot of effort that they're going to change anyway. So you're going to make this amazing pilot, this amazing movie, and they're going to go, that's great, but we can't do that because we already have a chicken on this other show. And you're like, but my chicken's the star of the show. Yeah, we can't do this chicken because there's just, you know, over here on Rooster Face, that's our lead character. So you got to change your chicken into another bird. Can you be a peacock? There's always that type of stuff. Right. And so you're like, well, so don't, you know, I'm not saying not to make your own film. Definitely if you want to do something like that, by all means, make your own film. But make sure that you are ready to hear some feedback from people and be prepared to change some stuff as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's just, I'm trying to save you some work. So you want to bring in your idea with, if it's an animated show, you want to bring in like a character drawing of your characters. Here's the lineup. Make sure you bring in a lineup. Like, what is my, you know, here's the show. What does it look like? Like these posters I have on the wall back here. These are all posters from things I've worked on or what other people have worked on. You want to make sure that it looks real to the people. Here's what this show, like when you're walking to a movie theater, you see all the movie posters, you know, it's like, oh, that's what that, oh, that's a cool poster. What is that? You want to see that. So it's one image. It tells a whole story. So what does your image tell you? You know what I mean? What does that story tell? What does that poster tell you? So make sure you have as much information as you can. Line up for the characters. You want to have maybe it's called a show Bible, meaning you want to have like, here's a character number one, Johnny. Johnny is this. There's a little paragraph about Johnny. And then his best friend, Susie, a little paragraph about Susie with a drawing next to each one. Because again, you're walking in cold. These people have never met you.
Yeah.
Maybe they have, but they never met you. They have no idea what you're going to pitch them. You need to make it as clear as possible. Here's the idea I'm pitching. Like, here's an idea I have for two weenie dogs. See these weenie dogs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right there, there's an idea. This is called Teeny and Weenie. So there's Teeny and there's Weenie. So the point is you have two weenie dogs and I've already shown you what they look like. So you can kind of get an image in your head. You can already see some possibilities there. So what's going to happen with these two characters? You never know. So what does your drawing say? You need to be giving people information is what you need to be giving them.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
God, I'm talking so long. I'm so sorry.
No, I love it. And it's so, so valuable because I think this is stuff that people just don't hear, you know,
yeah.
And then they find themselves in situations where they put themselves out there maybe, and then it becomes so catastrophic because they didn't have access to this information that then they go, all right, that's it. I'm done because I got decimated.
Well, you know, I got news for you. Even with this information, there's going to be times where things don't go well, but there's going to be a lot more times where things go great. They're going to go better. In fact, you might even go in and nail the pitch. I've gone in many times and I just nailed the pitch. I knew it was great, but they just didn't buy the property. Why? Either the timing wasn't right or they already had a show with a panda in it. I don't know. Or maybe one of the executives didn't like me. I have no idea. But there's all kinds of factors. But when the timing is right, when you're ready, you know you got a great idea, and you just know it's perfect for this network. You know, most of the time, I want you to keep this in mind too. They're not just buying the product, they're buying you. They're buying you. Can you be trusted with $5 million? Can we give this guy $5 million, or girl, can we give them $5 million to make a show? And will we get our money's worth out of this person? Is this person capable? Is this person nuts? Is this person, you know, non-focused? I mean, you know, we need to make sure you walk in, you've got to be a professional. And I've seen many a show. I've seen people sell shows. They're making a show. They have a staff. They're in there making the show. And it just didn't go well because that person was not a good leader. They didn't know how to lead people. They got behind schedule. The network had to spend extra money getting at least one or two shows done. And then the person gets fired off their own show. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Wow. So you want to make sure that you're ready for this kind of thing.
Yeah. Such good stuff, Butch.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure, like, just switching gears a little bit. So you've done, you know, animating, you've done writing, you've done voiceover work, right? You've done so many of these different creative expressions. First off, has some of the stuff just come about because of necessity? Like you were saying, how you just need to be able to either write something because you need to pitch your idea, or you need to do a voice because someone else wasn't available, or you had this idea of this character that you knew you had to do that. Talk a little bit about your process in regards to the other creative expressions.
Real good question. Most of it does come out of necessity. Most of it. Because like right now I'm in my office by myself, right? If I want to create a show right now, it's just me in here. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to draw this character. I'm going to write this description. I'm going to paste them both together on Photoshop. I'm going to now print it out into a PDF. How do I do all that? I mean, you got to learn how to do all of that stuff. You know, now I want to write a theme song. I've got my guitar over here. I'll sit and I'll pluck out some notes on the guitar. That's cool. Or I'll go, okay, I like these words. I like this. I like these lyrics. I'll call my friend Guy Moon, who's a better musician than I am. And I'll say, hey, can you put this into a quick demo for me? Because I have a connection with him now. But beforehand, I'd be like, look, here's my theme song. Okay, I've written these lyrics. Here's my poem. Let's put this to a tune. Great. And he'd put it to an incredible tune and be like, oh, that's an amazing song. And then a theme song is born, you know, that sort of stuff. So it does come out of necessity. Like with voices, there were some times where we needed a voice for character number 4. And instead of bringing another actor in that would take 3 days, I would just go in and do the voice just because I needed to get it done. You know, I could say this, step right up. You know, the circus isn't down. I could do that in 2 seconds. So then, boom, we have the voice. I would normally go in to do a temporary voice until the actor got there. But sometimes I would just say, yeah, that's fine. We don't need the main actor to come in. We already had them on this other show. We paid them for that. Because I want to pay people what they're worth. And so I'm like, we try and get as many voices out of these people as we possibly can. And then sometimes there's just something that comes up where I just want, and then sometimes I want to do a voice, you know, I want to do a voice and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it seems to me that you're like, you have all these different creative expressions, almost like tools in your tool belt. And so you've got your vision, you're kind of the captain of the ship, and then you're employing all these different things so that you can accomplish your creative goal and have your show or your pitch or whatever your idea is to be able to really flesh that out. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, having a tool belt of skills is great, but each tool in the tool belt takes about 10 years to develop the skill in a good way. Maybe not 10 years, but a couple of years. You know, there was a time I couldn't do storyboards. I didn't know how to do storyboards, and I got fired off a job because I couldn't do storyboards. So I made it a mission in life to learn storyboards. So now I'm a guy who can do character designs, storyboards, and I can write. Now I've got 3 things I can do. And then I became a director. So now I can do 4 things. And then, you know, I became a voice actor and blah, blah, blah. So the list goes on, and you're going to find as you move up the ladder in your chosen profession, you're going to get good at a ton of things. And before you know it, you're going to have a wealth of experience. You know, you're going to have way, like, you know, you're younger than I am, but back when you were 20, you didn't know a tenth of the things you know now, you know, and with age comes so many different things. I'm not saying age is great. We don't want to help, but with the one thing about age is wisdom. You're like, yeah, I wish there are people I know out there in their 20s doing things I'm warning them not to do. I'm like, please don't do that. Please. Okay. You know better than me. Fine. You'll find out. You'll figure it out. And there's people older than me telling me things I shouldn't be doing. So listen, wisdom is a very valuable thing. The Bible says it's more precious than silver and or gold. And so, you know, we got to hunt down wisdom even more than we'd hunt down silver or gold.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of the wisdom,
yeah.
Final question for you. Is there something that someone has, a piece of advice that someone's given you that's been really just really helpful and instrumental for you regarding your business, your creativity?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a big question. I met so many people, including my amazing wife, who have given me so much advice over the years and so much counseling. And I'm just going to go back to Jesus again. I think Jesus gave, he obviously, there's so much advice in the words of Jesus, but, you know, I really realized that when I gave all of my burden to him, that a lot of it made things a lot easier. You know, he says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. So, and he even says in 1 Peter 5:7, it says, cast your care on him for he cares for you. So I started going, you know what, Jesus, I don't want to think about this anymore. I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I would just say, and don't get me wrong, thoughts come, right? They do come. And it's the negative thoughts that will do you in if you don't take control of them. And 2 Corinthians, it says to take every thought captive, you know, to the obedience of Christ. So when that negative thought comes in, you got to catch it and take it captive and say, nope, I'm not going down that road. Hey, Butch, they might cancel your show. I don't care. Not listening. I'm moving it over here. Yeah, but Butch, you know, all your staff's going to lose their jobs. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it right now. I'm focused on the positive. Staying focused on the positive is what Jesus taught me how to do. So That's pretty much where I stand on that. Again, there's a lot of humans that have given me some great, Jesus was a human too. I mean, like, you know, a lot of people that have given me amazing advice. Fred Seibert, my co-producer on Fairly Odd Parents, he always gave me great advice because I wanted to be an actor for a while. And Fred told me, you know, you're cut out for so much more than just being an actor. Nothing against actors, don't get me wrong. But you're cut out for more than being an actor. Because in fact, if you become an actor only, I'll be very disappointed in you. And I never forgot that. Fred said that. So I was like, you know what? I'll be an actor as well, but I'm going to do a bunch of other things too. So he was really instrumental.
Mm, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful. Keeping the positive in front of you and just leaning in and really understanding your values, your gifts.
Yeah.
And
I encourage everybody to stay positive too, because guys, you know, the world tries to take you out every single day that you're hearing negative. I tell people not to watch the news all the time because the news is just designed to scare you and be, you know, it's just not healthy to watch so much news all the time. You know, find yourself a good book to read or go out and walk in the sunshine and, you know, go get a dog, walk your dog or read the Bible, do something that lifts your spirits. You know, you need something to keep your spirit lifted because you're going to, if you can do what you love every day, it's not work. And I encourage everybody out there to get a chance or work toward doing what you love because you're never going to regret it. It's going to be awesome. And I wish you guys nothing but the best out there.
Absolutely. So Butch, where can people find your book? How can they follow along with you and just continue to see the amazing work that you're putting out there?
You're so kind, Mike Brennan. I'm going to put a post review back here. Thank you, man. No, you guys can find me all over social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram at Butch Hartman. I'm on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel called Very Creatively Butch Hartman. They hired a guy named Butch Hartman to be on the Butch Hartman channel. You can find me on social media and you can get the book Mad Hustle. You get it at madhustlebook.com or get it on Amazon too.
Yes. And I encourage people greatly, get that book. Dive in deeper if you want to know about pitching, and follow Butch because he puts out amazing content. I love seeing all your drawings that you're putting out there every day and just how you're interacting with your audience. It's very inspiring to me as well. So,
well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. I started running out of drawings to put up because I already put everything up. I gotta keep generating more stuff. Actually, I have so much stuff I can put up. I just want to make sure that people like it. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you again for our time today. And I'm going to put all that information in our show notes so people can find you very easily, follow along and buy your book. So
it's my honor, Mike. Thanks for having me on. And thanks everybody out there. And you know, get out there, pitch your show, make a living doing what you love. My slogan is this: the dream is free, but the hustle is sold separately. So there you go.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.